Ooh, it's getting a little sensual with the mic. So, before the start of our Rage Quit episode, I would like to tell a little bit about Rage Quit's sponsor. So, welcome to another episode of Rage Quit, the husband and wife duo that discusses video games every week. Rage Quit is sponsored by AFK Clothing Co. Are you a gamer? Do you enjoy games? Then check out AFK Clothing Co. for all of your gaming apparel needs. As I record this, I am sporting an AFK green sleeve baseball tee that I absolutely love and wear every week. We'd never be sponsored by something we didn't like. And if you'd like to support the show, head on over to AFK Clothing Co., link in the description below, and type ASI in the promo code box to get 10% off your next order. As always, just follow the bear, and now on to the show.
Ah! That was a false start.
It's always a false start. I don't know how many of these I've edited where it's just Ariel screaming. Or bam, 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 bam. It either begins or ends that way, usually.
So.
Well, it is kind of, it's like rage inducing. It's rage
quit. It's rage quit. It's the whole point I do
You gotta be like, you gotta channel your rage. You just make a large
Well, I feel like when you're playing a game and you rage quit, you're not channeling your rage. You're already fucking just like,
it's grown, it's already channeled for you.
Grown anger.
That's the thing. Littering. Like, it's just one of those things. No. Oh, there's the dog.
That make you angry.
That's why it's funny.
Stop.
But, yeah. Anyways, I'm Anthony Schultz.
Aww. I'm Ariel Schultz.
And this is episode 16 of Rage Quit.
Rage Quatians! Rage Quatians!
Okay, apparently the dogs cannot be in the kitchen.
I just wanted her in, so. It's like we're back again.
Nobody knows, though. That's the thing.
But that's why it's
dogs funny. Freak out. We stop the podcast.
Baby screams. We got to stop the podcast. Adulting happens. We got to stop the podcast.
I know. Anyways, this is episode 16 of Rage Quit. It's going to be about kind of like subgenres into
games.
Main genres of games. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to be talking about a little bit about Metroidvanias today, as well as kind of a newer genre, Soulsborne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which will be interesting. So it'll be a little bit of a deep dive. Probably similar, I would imagine, to our Bioshock one.
Probably, yeah.
Kind of.
More along the lines of those.
Or it's like, just a deep dive into, you know, in this case, a specific genre. That was about a specific franchise and studio and creator, so.
Well, the reason why I brought it up, because I was watching you play some games recently, like I tend to do, where I sit on the couch and pretend to, you know, I take a nap and just watch you play games.
Snap nap.
And I saw that, you know, you would try to finish up a level on a certain game and you couldn't, and then, of course, that's mirrors a minor frustration, because that's what games do, and so named Rage Quit. And you get to have to come back after getting a special ability, a key, meeting a boss, or doing something. I'm like, you know, this reminds me of when I played Spyro on the PlayStation, and obviously the remake and the original, and then obviously some Zelda games I even play that have stuff like that. And it's what piqued my interest. I'm like, I honestly didn't know that wasn't even technically a genre.
Oh, Metroidvania. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not one where most people that play games are going to, like, look at, you know, like, box art or probably more like a trailer for a game and be like, oh, that's a Metroidvania. Because there is some kind of confusion, especially nowadays. Mm-hmm. And so it fits into a lot of specific games. There's some that are, like, definitely, like, hardcore. Like, that's absolutely a Metroidvania game. But there's a lot of games nowadays where it's, like, those kind of elements fit within, you know, a bigger
scope
genre
of a game, yeah.
Because, like, specifically, you were mentioning I've been playing Yeast 8, Lacrimosa of Donna. And that definitely has Metroidvania elements to it.
It's not 100% like that, no, but.
And I will actually define it real quick, just so our audience kind of knows. So we're not just talking in circles.
He was talking about it. I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, because we were originally pitching the podcast more as,
platformers.
Like, platformers and stuff, but I was a little unsure of, like, the focus of the podcast. So we talked about it, you know, obviously before we started recording, but
what? We do that?
And there's some planning involved.
Dang it.
In conversation. So this is just via Wikipedia. I'll just read the one paragraph.
Not the whole paragraph?
Well, no, it is a whole paragraph, just not multiple paragraphs. The term Metroidvania is most often used to refer to a platforming game that features a single large interconnected map, generally with discrete rooms or sections. Not all areas of this map are available at the start, often requiring the player to obtain an item, such as a weapon or a key, or a new character ability to remove some obstacle blocking the path forward. Often this item is protected by a boss character, providing story-driven challenges throughout the game. Maps are non-linear and often require the player to traverse the map multiple times during the course of the game. Weaker monsters will inhabit other parts of the level, respawning when the player revisits those rooms, and often can be defeated to gain health, ammunition, or experience points. So that's just kind of like the underlying like concept. Or
isn't it a combination of two names, Metroid?
Yeah, so there's a super famous Nintendo series, Metroid.
This is why we kind of like, we're talking about it, because it's a combination of two names, actually.
Yeah, it's a portmanteau, which you're famous for.
Mm-hmm. Why portmanteau that bitch up?
Oh, yeah, all the time. yeah, so Metroid is a famous Nintendo franchise that started with Metroid. On the Super Nintendo, there was Super Metroid, which is very famous. Even I've played it. Mm-hmm. I was, like, our listeners know I was a Sega kid growing up, but mm-hmm. even I played Super Metroid. I know fans are kind of clamoring for a new one now. There hasn't been one in quite a while.
Yeah.
And then the other half of that is Castlevania. Specifically Castlevania Symphony of the Night, which came out on PlayStation 1. That has a very long kind of story history, too, all the way back to, like, the NES and stuff, so.
Which I think is kind of cool how they, like, combine it. It's obviously on two separate consoles, and, like, hey, they actually both kind of do the same thing, which makes sense. A lot of games do that anyways, but.
Yeah, and Metroid, it's definitely more in that subgenre of, like, a Metroidvania. It's more heavy Metroid-wise.
Yeah.
Probably. Because Castlevania kind of experimented with different ways to do things it. And gameplay and level design and stuff like that through, like, each of their early like installments,
which is kind of cool.
Metroid, again, the first one on the NES may not have been like the first of its kind to kind of do that, mm-hmm. but it was the one that was like people loved and was like well received mm-hmm. and like thought about, and then Super Metroid came out, and that was like it was a very big deal, and well, oftentimes top 10 games ever for people.
Well, it's like isn't it both of them? No, I might be getting this one backwards because we just talked about this. Aren't they both inspired from the original Zelda?
Not necessarily Metroid per se, because that was Nintendo owned as well. I'm sure that there was some kind of communication.
Yeah, influences.
Yeah, so there would be some influences. But specifically, Capcom, yes, tried to mimic what Nintendo was doing with Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted, obviously, like, a gothic horror mm-hmm. kind of inspired one. That was their spin or take on it. But as far as, like, level design and even, like, maybe not necessarily a top-down perspective, but, like, a side perspective.
Yeah.
They wanted that kind of, like, omniscient worldview mm-hmm. that, like, as the player. And then so you see, like, the entire level.
Yeah.
Or, like, in the original Zelda and the NES, you know, drop you down. Saw, it was drop down, you saw an entire, like, you know, main area or tile
yeah.
that you could explore before you moved on to the next one.
You see, like, this little prison there, you're like, oh, why can't I get in that door? That fucking pissed me off right now.
Exactly. And so then, therefore, because they were, you know, pulling inspiration from Zelda, the really early ones, some things like that, where things were locked out, and you
feathered,
had to
feathered my cat for that, by the way.
You had to, you know, get certain items, obviously, in Zelda to unlock certain areas. Mm-hmm. But in the original ones, you could kind of do things in whatever order you wanted. Yeah. Like, there's a fast way to do it, but you could also, you had the freedom to explore.
Yeah. You weren't having to go.
Really kind of the first, like, open world game, too, when you think about it. Zelda.
Don't get me on that rally of open fucking worlds. We're not in that.
Range. I know, right?
All right, move on.
But yeah, they definitely did take inspiration from Zelda. Castlevania did, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, between Metroid and Castlevania, we get this kind of interesting subgenre of, like, action-adventure games called Metroidvanias.
Good a few, like, recent ones, too. Like, we were talking about, like, Spyro. Forgetting it was originally on the PS1, and then it was re-released on the PlayStation 4 as a remastered.
As a platformer, though, like, absolutely. Like, especially the second mm-hmm. one.
Oh, the second one, most definitely. The first is one very Metroidvania more style. Than, like...
Yeah. First one, I would say, is just more of kind of a traditional 3D platformer.
Yeah, the second one, though, because obviously...
You have to do backtracking, you have to get certain abilities, you have to purchase certain abilities to go back to the other levels. The water. You can quickly travel between levels, mm-hmm. like...
you can easily exit out of a level to go to like a homeworld and then go to another level mm-hmm. because you bought an ability from Money this Bags. Dude,
yeah.
and can use then said ability to unlock a new area mm-hmm. in an old level that you already did. So it's like, it definitely has very distinct Metroidvania elements.
That's like a good kind of segue to piece together the time frames, I guess, from like, you know, the first PlayStation is remastered Spyro, and then of course we got
I think Darksiders, we talked earlier, Darksiders, I thought was a really good example.
Darksiders.
That totally is.
Oh, straight up is Darksiders.
And people compare, especially the early Darksiders games to Zelda mm-hmm. in particular. So it's like, you can definitely kind of see the thorough line between like Darksiders, Zelda, Metroidvania, mm-hmm. which we kind of discussed. And how they all kind of relate to one another.
Like the second Spyro as well, which makes more sense to it that way, because that started getting like more popular. And it seems to be very popular nowadays. They just seem to combine it with RPGs like Yeast,
They're more complicated for sure, and they're kind of wrapped up into other genres as well. You get more distinct ones with like mm-hmm. Bloodstained.
Bloodstained is what I was trying to get towards, where it's like, you know,
that's like most definitely Metroidvania. Yeah, that has all the hallmarks of a Metroidvania.
Hallmarks. Hallmarks. She's in the past and still getting gonna jokes.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, so it's just funny to see that. I like the idea of seeing, obviously, where the origins are and how it's still to this day just such a big thing to do. And people obviously fail too. Like Yooka-Laylee, like we were talking about, was meant to be that, but that game was so janky when it started out. Like, oh, come on.
That was bad, yeah. I don't know if, like, that would necessarily like fall into.
We didn't really play that one enough.
Yeah, I didn't get far enough to know if like there's backtracking and you get like powers and stuff or mm-hmm. abilities. Like,
I feel
I don't
it
know
may have
sure.
tried to have been that, but at the same time, it was just so freaking janky in the beginning. Like, it was just horrible motion sickness and.
Yeah, it was rough for sure. Because you can play like these remasters or some of these other ones and you're fine.
Oh, yeah.
And then I try to play that, and I don't get really experience motion sickness, and I did with that game. Mm-hmm. So I had difficulties playing it. Supposedly the sequel or whatever, like, 2D game that they did afterwards did really well.
Yeah.
So, and it was a good game, so.
So how do you feel about those Metroid games?
Metroidvanias are actually some of my favorite. I may not be the biggest Zelda fan. Like, I played some of them. But I played all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I missed out on like the most popular ones with the 64, but I played Oracles of Ages and Seasons, which definitely have like a distinct Metroidvania kind of feel to it. Darksiders I really liked, and I remember at the time, especially when the first one came out, people were like, this is like a Zelda clone. And I was like, but I didn't quite have that connection.
You didn't play Zelda.
Yeah, so I missed out on a lot of the 3D Zeldas, and I hadn't played them yet. And so it was like, ah, well, regardless, this is awesome. Like,
yeah,
even if it
cool
is,
game,
like,
yeah.
a Zelda clone, like, I'm totally down with this. Like, I really enjoyed the first Darksiders. Two, I didn't get too much into. Three, I really enjoy. But mm-hmm. seems to be, like, more return to form.
It is, yeah. The second one was weird. We didn't even finish it.
I will. And I'm excited to play Genesis.
Yeah,
that
would
just
be
because that seems to be more
well,
like a Diablo light.
Diablo.
Know.
The game we like to play.
So, yeah, there's been a ton of games over the years that I've really enjoyed that are Metroidvanias.
Mm-hmm.
And the two games that make up Metroidvania, Castlevania Symphony of the Night and
Metroid.
Super Metroid.
What are your top favorites?
Yeah, those are some of my favorite games. I really enjoyed both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, there just is a lot of DNA in that genre in a lot of games that I play.
Yeah.
Because that's probably the biggest genre of games I play now is probably action-adventure games.
Yeah, it's true.
And a Metroidvania is, like, by extension, like, naturally an action-adventure game. It just is.
So do you feel like some games go too far into that genre, the Metroidvania, where, like, obviously the Bloodstained one, that one...
Bloodstained I liked. I just found it a little frustrating. I almost wish that they had leaned harder into it, actually.
Really? Why?
Just to make it didn't feel like it had that kind of classic vibe to it. And that was more with, like, the 2D or 2.5D art style that they did. A lot of these older games, they had, like, hand-painted backgrounds and stuff. So this is more like an art aesthetic.
Yeah.
And then it felt like they, like, overextended and tried to include other elements.
Like the weird cat creature.
I'm fine with stuff like that, but it's like I felt like they just tried to include other elements from other genres into it to make it like bigger and better and like flesh it out more. But I don't think they needed to do that. I think they could have like stripped it down, and it could have been a very like classic like Metroidvania through and through. Spend the time instead of like making more things to do and focus on like, you know, the painted artwork.
Yeah.
And things like that to help increase maybe the aesthetic. Mm-hmm. I know it's cheaper and easier to do like 2.5D stuff nowadays, but. I get why they made that artistic choice, but I think it could be better, and actually would have been better if it leaned more into its roots rather than trying to stray outside of it. And at face value, it doesn't seem that it is straying from it. But playing it and diving into it and, like, you just thinking about it, kind of reminiscing about it, I don't think it was actually, like, as close as we think. Like, I think it at its core was exactly that, but it added too much stuff to the top layer, and, like, the classic Metroidvania kind of gameplay style got muddled a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
It is a really good game, still.
No, it is a really good game. I just, like, I like some games. I like the middle balance where it's got a good adventure and story to it, and then it has that replayability in a sense of the word. We got to go back. I'm like, oh, I got this, and I can go back and unlock this, and I, ha, it's finished.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I like those check marks off. Like, I feel like it's more heavy Nintendo-wise. It's obviously bled off into other genres and games.
Yeah.
Obviously, we talked about this before. It's more heavy Nintendo-wise because Nintendo doesn't do trophies.
True. Yeah, they don't do achievements, but they still have plenty of games where they could.
Yeah, but they still aren't. Haven't.
I mean, they probably will eventually have some sort of achievement trophy system.
I'm not holding my breath to that. I'm just saying in general, that's, you know, my version of, you know, achievements. So when I go back, I'm like, oh, cool, check.
Oh, like 100%ing like areas and stuff. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's areas. That's probably why I'm the trophy whore now is because I love that too, like in old games where it was like, oh, this area is 100, it says, you know, in the menu screen, it's 100% complete.
Done, and I got all the treasures and...
And early platformers like Spyro, and even like Crash Bandicoot and like Jack and Daxter were really good about that, where it's like, oh, I missed whatever orb in this level. So then you can go back and like finish it. Like, that is cool.
Because his name is literally the Nanana guy.
Yeah. Exactly.
Fucker and trying to run and I can't get him.
I mean, I like nowadays how Metroidvania is like bleed into like larger genres, like RPGs. I think Yeats is a good example.
Stories.
Like it's got the big scope of an RPG. You have like a complex leveling up system. Like it's got a good story. But in the same breath, it has, like, you have to get the defeat bosses to get new, like, adventuring gear to go to hidden areas or the next area. Mm-hmm. You have to have a certain amount of, like, castaways in that game to unlock certain areas to either find more castaways or different gear.
Or open up the area.
or just plain open up the next area of the game to get to. So, I do like that, you know, large genres that I really enjoy, like RPGs, have very distinct Metroidvania elements in them.
Which is cool. And then it kind of segues into the other one, the Soulsborne.
Actually, I just thought of one while we were talking. Gotcha. I think there's a good in-between one we can kind of talk about timing-wise.
What?
The looter shooter. See, like Borderlands is a looter shooter.
Yeah.
Where it's like, that's a subgenre of the first-person shooter. It's obviously a first-person shooter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's very much concentrated on the loot that you get. Like, you're constantly picking...
Oh, you said lunar, not looter.
No, looter. Whatever. Like, looting. So you're constantly, like, picking through boxes and crates to, like, get money or new weapons. And then you get the better ones depending on what events you do or story missions and stuff.
That is true.
Like, the looter shooter is a very, like...
It's up and coming. It's not quite there. It's just...
Which the very first Borderlands really coined.
It did.
And made its own first-person subgenre. Just kind of like an action-adventure subgenre
with Metroidvania. I like how games have like their own action-adventure, a genre within a genre of other genre.
Yeah. Well, it's like that with music, when you think about it.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, because it's like you can get into like rock music. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, what do you have? Well, you have hard rock, you have metal, you have heavy metal, like you have scream. Like, there's so many different...
Grunge and...
Yeah, like, subgenres of music that fit into one overarching, you know, like you have pop music, and it's like, well, what constitutes pop music? And it's like, you can have like electro pop, you can have like indie pop. Yeah, you can have, I mean, you can have.
Yeah, I didn't even think about it like that way. That's very true.
It's just, I think it's easy to separate out in your mind two different mediums because one is very, very old. Mm-hmm. Like, music has just been around since the dawn of time.
True.
Like, as soon as we, you know, had the ability to, like, write and create, you had a chance to make music. And so then you're automatically starting to define genres and types of music. Yeah. And if someone's like avant-garde, then it's like that could radically change like the names of genres and things like that. You know, you look at the history of video games, it's like, what, 40, 50 years old at most? And so,
could you imagine like how we just like, obviously we're going to see it in our lifetime, just the expand on the game. Like, they already got VR and shit like that.
Oh, I've already seen it. It's like, there's even a, like a difference within, like, community.
Like, yeah, true.
Like, just younger gamers and older gamers. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, I fall into the latter category because it's like, well, I started with
like
the NES.
Like,
it's a
latter category instead of the older gamers. Now you're old.
But it's like, the thing I remember playing, like, the NES and having it, and, you know, before it was arcade games and maybe Atari and Commodore 64, which I've dicked around with before, too. Like, newer gamers.
What are you doing?
There's a lot of people who are like, oh, the Xbox One's the first console I ever really had. Or the Xbox 360.
Remember you tell me about it? I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, and that blows my mind. Because I'm like, oh, that's crazy. Because it was like, how many generations?
Because our son's going to do that, too.
Yeah, and that's where my mind immediately goes to as well. Is like, oh, what's his first going to be? His first memory of it? Like, he'll probably remember me playing games, but it'll be...
Which every kid kind of has, they're watching their parents play or try to play or...
Yeah, or movies they watch and stuff, yeah.
Music they listen to.
So for him, because he's, you know, only a year and a half, 2 years, right at the end of the PS4 generation, it'll probably be the PS5 will be the first thing that he will remember, that generation.
That's gonna be so
probably the PS5 and the Switch.
Yeah.
Are the things that he'll be, like, aware of and maybe have memories of.
And it's just, like, weird.
And for me,
see.
It's like, I remember being in, like, late junior high, almost high school, and getting a PlayStation 1.
I know.
And it's like, that's so weird.
N64 for me was my first one. And
yeah. And so it's like, that's super interesting.
No, it's cool to see that. I even think about that, you know, the Metroidvania, the loot shooters, and now the Soulsborne.
Yeah. I think it's cool to kind of live through those and see it, too. Looter Shooter, I didn't remember what we were discussing before the podcast, but I was like...
Well, it's newest on its own right.
It is. It's not very old. I mean, like, when did the first Borderlands come out? When did Demon's Souls come out, you know?
Yeah, good luck. I don't know that one. But the one thing I like about Soulsborne is because it's, like, the degree of difficulty, because you can even bring in Neil on this one, the degree of difficulty that they play.
So, yeah, 09, 10 years, like, or 11 now, you... From Borderlands. So, looter shooter. 11 years old, but continue on.
And how it's like where you collect souls or blood or, you know, what is it, Neo? Is it souls?
2009 as well. That's funny. They both came out the same year.
Souls as well for Neo? The souls?
What is it?
It's a karma or souls? Your healing pack.
Yeah.
It's like an elixir.
Because you can lose them and go back, and it's the same kind of thing. You touch, like, an imprint, and then you get them back if you can make it before dying again, which is... That's Dark Souls and Bloodborne.
Yeah.
I'll look that up as well.
Meh. But you collect these, you know, entities, and then you can lose them, but then you can go back and get them, and... It's just so weird to see those...
Distinct also, like, save points. So instead of, like, a bonfire in Dark Souls, you have...
a crypt...
Your little hut with the Kodamas on it.
Kodamas for Neo. Bloodborne is...
The lanterns.
Lantern. And then Souls is fire.
That's the fire one. Yeah.
Which are vastly different save points from, like, all the other games.
Yeah, it's like a focus on a save point, like, which I think adds to that genre as well.
The thing too is, like, with Bloodborne, which is where to say...
It's called Amarita, but it is the, like, souls of, like, the tangible souls of the fallen kind of a thing.
Haha, called it. So, souls, and blood.
Yeah.
Bloodborne is in its blood. It's just, like, you're always coated in blood. That.
And now we have Sekiro, and which is also from Software, who did Demon's Souls, Dark Souls, and Bloodborne, so...
It's just interesting to see how those vastly different...
Code Vein came out very similar as well, and it's gameplay. Oh, yeah, that's Code Vein. That's a Soulsborne as well. Just more anime kind of spin on it, but it's, like...
Titties!
Same kind of combat structure. Mm-hmm. I even noticed, I haven't played it yet, but Star Wars Jedi Star Fallen Wars, Order, a lot of people Star said Wars. That it was very reminiscent of a Soulsborne.
Yeah, okay.
Like, how it functioned and gameplay and, like, levels and stuff like that.
I could see that.
I could, too. It said it wasn't as difficult, which I think is very indicative.
How do you feel about the difficulties of the Soulsborns? Like, with everything we've been talking about, the platformers and all that, and Metro and everything, it's... They're not nearly as difficult. For granted, yeah, you've got to make a few rounds in those games, but...
I think that Soulsborne, I think it's very indicative of Soulsborne to be very brutal and very difficult. And you think that's why me as a gamer, I really enjoy that. But I don't think that it is ever... I think difficulty in particular isn't... it's not built for accessibility. It's not meant for every single player.
A lot of people don't like those other types of games we've been talking about either. Like, they don't like the have to go back and complete it. They like to complete it. They like their checklist to be done before they move on.
Yeah, they have more linear experience, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, that kind of boils down to your, like, preference as a gamer.
Yeah, no, then that does, too. And I'm just...
I think, like, Metroidvanias in particular are more accessible to people just because it's closely attached to base forms of gaming. So you're talking about level design. You're talking about bosses.
Yeah.
You're talking about, like a map. Like, and they're kind of just basic components of like a whole bunch of different games. Mm-hmm. When you get into like looter shooters, it's like that's very distinctly a subgenre of first person shooters. Mm-hmm. So you have to already like first person shooters.
True.
All video games kind of like fall into action and adventure.
What?
Because it's a form of escapism, so it's like that's an even broader scope than like a first-person shooter. If you don't like shooting in games or first-person shooters, you maybe only like third-person shooters or just third-person action games.
What's
like,
a third-person shooter? That's a stupid question.
Like Gears of War.
Oh, okay.
Like that one, where it's kind of like the top over the angle style. Even like Resident Evil 4 and 5, which we played and streamed together. Where it's like that over-the-shoulder third person.
Yeah, you're not... you're
creating the action with a firearm.
Okay, I know that one. Never mind. Yeah.
I think the most famous and best example would be Gears of War, to be honest. This is predominantly a PlayStation podcast, but it's a good example. You know, looter shooters just fit within it. Like, so if you don't like shooters, you're probably not going to like a looter shooter. That's kind of what it comes down to. It does have more RPG elements into it and more, like, it adventuring. Does. So it's like,
the same time,
might be a small bleed over, like, if you're like, I don't like any kind of shooter.
There's no different at bleeding over than the other genres. You're not going to get
It's going to be a Venn diagram, and I think that one just might be further apart than, like, a Metroidvania would be. I think there might be bigger overlaps with some other genres, like an RPG and Metroidvania. The middle bit would be huge, I think. If you do the same kind of thing for, like, looter shooters and, like, you know, action-adventure games, I think it's going to be a smaller sliver. And I think same kind of thing can be said with the tie it back, like, a very unrelenting or difficult game, like Soulsborne games can be, is also going to have kind of that in-between kind of, like, Venn diagram. Just because it's, like, people may really like action-adventure games, but it is, like, brutally difficult. So, they may not play games for that, you know?
No,
they may not. There's nothing wrong with it. Personally, I enjoy it, though. I like hard games, so...
I don't think we care about your personal opinion.
You asked my personal opinion before we preface this conversation. Don't lie to me. Witch!
Bringing out my talent here. Makes me want to play Bloodborne again.
Alright.
But it's just crazy to see how those subcategories come amongst games when they were just kind of... everything has an origin, but it's funny to see it.
Yeah, it is crazy. I think it's... I didn't think about... looter shooters, like what we were talking before, for example.
No,
but I did think of Soulsborne... But it's cool to kind of live through those.
And if you think about it, too, Metroidvania has been around a lot longer than The other games have been.
Oh, yeah, Metroidvania is definitely a lot older than, like, Looter Shooter and Soulsborne, for sure.
It is. It's just crazy to see, like we're saying that, and then having them come back with all the remasters and...
Also, you gotta think, it's like, Soulsborne games could have existed 20 years ago, easily. Games are notoriously hard, but you could have, like, very distinctly... like, action-adventure games with, like, very distinct save points. Mm. Like, even in, like, early kind of 3D PS1, 64 tech, it wouldn't be as grandiose or huge or as pretty, for granted.
Do you think the reason they couldn't do it is because they just... Okay, so, kind of to make a big circle back, though, because we, like you said, didn't think about looter shooters until we started talking more in depth. And Borderlands is obviously where it started, but there's other ones like The Division... and Destiny.
Oh, yeah. I think those are, like, prime examples that definitely... obviously came after Borderlands. But one... both games as a service, mm-hmm. which...
I think it's why we didn't think about it.
It's kind of new on its own. Yeah. But, yeah, you get the Division... Division 2, which mm-hmm. was received really well and yeah. did really well. Came out last year. Even I got on that bandwagon.
Well, I feel like the reason we didn't even think about it, too, because, like you said, it's a service. It's not like Borderlands, which is just, it's a game.
Yeah, you buy it, and then wait for that's the sequel. It kind of thing. Yeah, you either wait for a sequel or DLC, buy a season pass, yeah. and you get a DLC package. It is more traditional kind of gaming. Plus, our mindset, when we started with Metroidvania, so we're already kind of looking back and talking about retro like traditional. Games. Yeah.
And it's just funny to see, too, as well, how it goes from traditional to even a new age genre that aren't traditional. And still traditional. Because you think about it, there's still...
It is. It's such, like, a mixer match, especially with, mm-hmm. you know, we talked about, like, the length of time with, like, say, the music industry.
Yeah.
Like, and we can even boil that down to just say, like, American music.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, say, like, maybe last 80 years. Yep. You know, let's go back mm-hmm. to 1920. So, like, oh, wow. More than 100 years now. It's not 2000 anymore. Whoops. Aww. Like 100 years, we can talk about you know, music of the 1920s, and then
this is the easy jump to 100.
How that evolved and changed, and you get you know, Billboard charts and mm-hmm. stuff like that, and mm-hmm. then all these different subcategories and things. It's like, if we were very distinctly focused on the 1920s, like, you probably wouldn't talk about Britney Spears. You know, it's like in the context of a podcast. So I think our mindset was very much like in the storied annals of video game history.
I don't think they'd be doing podcasts back in the 1920s.
I wish. Cool. Maybe that's the setup. If you could take anything back to the 1920s, like one specific thing, like, I'd bring back what I need to podcast. And then I'd podcast in like Hemingway. I don't know how I'd convince him to do it.
Oh my God.
Cole yeah. Porter. We'll go back to music.
Dear Lord. Anyways. But no, it's just kind of weird to think, because it's obviously that, again, in its own right, is a new age thinking and how to do games and everything, like Fallout 76 and all that.
Yeah, I mean, games as a service, yeah, it's like definitely more of its own genre. But it's a
looter shooter, though. If you think, if 76 is even considered a looter shooter.
Yeah, to a degree, yeah. The gameplay loop is all about getting better and better loot, and you're mm-hmm. shooting. Yeah. Well, but it's like Fallout 76 should probably be more of an MMO, an MMORPG specifically.
Yeah, well, considering if you think about it with you, though, you don't shoot things, you just smash things with a hammer.
Yeah, I've been melee since Fallout 4.
You've always been melee, you weirdo.
When I played 3 in New Vegas, I wasn't. That's the funny part.
Well, we weren't together, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't count. Everything before is just blank slate.
We talked about this on the ride home.
Dang it. You know the rules. Shut the fuck up.
Nothing counts before. There's nothing before me.
It is interesting, though, how, like, talking about very specific, like, kind of subgenres mm-hmm. as, like, a topic for a podcast leads you to revelations about other new genres.
Yeah.
And also how they kind of mix and match, like, yep. or how they fit in the side of, like, larger umbrellas mm-hmm. or, like, kind of neck and neck and like distinct hybrids of, you know, two different genres mm-hmm. like, because yeah, it did lead us to, you know, we're gonna talk about Metroidvanias at first, and I was like, what about Soulsborne? And then in the midst of that conversation, we got a looter shooter, which then you think more about looter shooters and you're like, oh, what about games as a service? Like,
Let's connect the dots and make a shape. It's a square. It's
like not technically an MMO, but not it's continually.
Not. It's an RPG.
But it's online. So it's
like, dots. Bulbs. Again! This is too much.
But yeah, I think Destiny and The Division would be definitely looter shooters. I mean, that's the gameplay loop is you're shooting. You're done there. So you got either the first person shooter in the case of Destiny or third person shooter in the case of The Division. Mm-hmm. And the main gameplay loop is just trying to find better and better gear. Mm-hmm. And even the leveling up systems in both those games reflect that. Like, mm-hmm. Your rank starts to go up. You know, if it's Destiny, it's your light level, but that's based on the pieces of like armor or weaponry you mm-hmm. have. In The Division, it's the same thing. Like, you know, it's your gear score. And yeah. So it's like, that's directly reflected in the genre that it actually is in. Looter shooter, you know.
Looter shooter. Which is so weird how one game, what was the weird ass name Borderlands was going for?
Oh, yeah, I thought about this too. Because
it wasn't initially going for looter shooter. It kind of did its own thing.
They really wanted it to be a, it was like a shooter RPG hybrid, mm-hmm. and I think, or like FPS RPG hybrid, and I think that's how it was like initially.
What the hell is FPS?
First person shooter.
You people and your goddamn acronyms.
There's a ton, especially if you get into like the MMO massively multiplayer online communities.
Okay,
like,
just shut up. We're not gonna talk about that.
And their jargon for some stuff, like communicating with people and things. I'm like, oh, I don't know what any of that means. Like
English, yeah. English.
And they're like the baseline stuff for gamers, like genres and stuff.
Fucking noob.
Noob. You weeb.
The fuck's a weeb? Oh my god. It's like the thought shit going on there again. Mm-hmm. Why not just say it? It's funnier to say it out.
It is, yeah.
Oh, look at
that. Essentially, since most people don't
think they go with that thought.
That it's like.
Look at that thought. You just said that. Literally, just you.
Yeah, you said it twice. Yeah,
you said it twice, and you just dropped the hoe.
Yeah, you're redundant. Yeah. Which is hilarious. Yes, there's a lot of acronyms in gaming, especially when talking about genres specifically.
Well, I get like the genres and stuff because, you know, we shooters, action shooters, and all that because, like, you know, every game can be a shooter, but not every game's an action shooter, you know?
It's kind of funny, though, like, you bring that up. It's like you'll say FPS for first person shooter, but you don't say, like, TPS. For third-person shooter.
Sounds like a tampon commercial. Hey, yeah.
Or like you have a syndrome.
I got the TPS, man.
Yeah, it's like something-something syndrome.
It's contagious.
But FPS doesn't come across that way. It could, though.
But it could. First-person syndrome.
First-person syndrome. That's everyone. Everyone experiences first-person syndrome.
Leave my brain alone, okay?
Funny. But yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, somebody can call me out if I'm wrong for like, always, but I think the marketing for Borderlands, like, the official kind of marketing for mm-hmm. it, like, in, like, interviews and press releases and stuff like that, is they wanted it to be the first, like, role-playing game and first-person shooter, like, hybrid.
Okay.
They wanted, like, equal parts role-playing, like, equal parts shooter. And then, I think after the release of that first one, mm-hmm. it was probably by players.
How can it be a role-playing game, though? You don't create your own character.
Well, you don't in, like, Yeast. Or Final Fantasy, even. You don't create your own character.
It's a little plane driving over our house. That's cool.
It's more, like, you have, like, a leveling and progression system. Mm. Oh, you have, like, a skill tree.
Again, that's
you
gain gonna, experience. That's going to have its own subgenres. Everything could be this, but it's not odd. Everything's
yeah,
bad.
Like, you, like, the moment-to-moment gameplay in Borderlands is definitely a first-person mm-hmm. shooter, but as far as, like, how you, like, you have an upgrade and a skill tree, like, you get experience from killing enemies, more difficult enemies give you more experience.
Yeah.
And then your character levels up and becomes stronger, and then there's a very distinct,
I feel like you're, like
story.
The worst person for a co-host for a video game comp.
Me?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I fucking suck at this shit.
I'm the worst because you suck?
No. Well, what? You're just like, middle with head. No, you had the worst co-host. I'm
the
worst.
Oh, that's not true. I thought you said, you're the worst co-host because I suck. And I was like, wait, what? But, first of all, you don't suck. And second of all, ouch, why? Like, don't be a dick.
Oh my Leon. My bad. That's not what I was saying.
But no, role-playing games are more, like, distinctly defined by, like, that. By having an experience, skill trees, mm-hmm. You know, a very concrete story. You know?
Yeah.
You get A to B from the beginning to the end, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's NPCs, mm-hmm. there's character interaction, there's things like that.
True.
And there are some RPGs where you get to make your own character. I mean, you get, like, Skyrim or something, or, like, Oblivion.
I guess, if you want to... Like I said, everything can be considered this, but they're not all that.
Yeah. But I'm pretty sure the early marketing for the first Borderlands was that. They wanted to be a hybrid of these two genres. And I think it was, like, more so the... like, player base, after the fact, mm-hmm. coined the term looter shooter.
Which it makes sense, because they were talking about fucking loot boxes and loots and shit. And
yeah, and the Division 2 is really good about that, and so is Destiny, where it's like... And they really kind of doubled down on the looter shooter, even though they weren't the first, because their, like, level progression, especially in endgame material, mm-hmm. is distinctly defined by the gear you have. The loot you have
mm-hmm.
determines your level, you know, as far as what is seen to other players or how strong your character is.
Yeah.
So.
What do you think? That's crazy how, you know, we got the genres action, RPG, MMOs, and all that. And then we got Metro Veins, Blood Souls, and Looter Shooters amongst that as well, which if you... Like I said, there's always this big tree, and it's got a bunch of branches and roots.
Well, there's roguelikes, too.
Oh, what the fuck is that? Oh, my God!
Usually, like, procedurally generated levels, and the intent is for you to, like, die within the level,
mm-hmm.
and then you, like, spawn back out of it, and then you, like, go back in. So, like... Easier put is, like, there's a big castle.
Mm-hmm.
You go into the castle. It looks different every time you go into it, but you explore a little bit further each time.
Yeah, nobody likes that shit.
And then you die, and then you get bumped out, but you, mm-hmm. you've gained something from being in the castle. If anything, at least knowledge and more of the, like, you went further in. You could go longer because you got certain items or, like, equipment or money even. And then you upgrade your dude, and then you go back in.
Like,
you go as far as you can until some of them it's very distinctly you die and you just mm-hmm. get bumped out, or
you can't go any farther.
You're going to die, kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a game over kind of situation. So you leave and then you heal, do your stuff, all your inventory management, and then you go back in and it's re-procedurally generated. You have to start from the beginning of that castle door, and it looks completely different. All the rooms are different. And then you, again, go as far as you can,
mm-hmm.
and then, again, you bump out, and it's just, that's the game.
It sounds like some Bro4 shit, or some, Gungeon, Enter the Gungeon?
Yeah, kinda. Yeah, that would be a roguelite for sure. There was one I did when I was reviewing games called Rogue Legacy that mm-hmm. I really liked. And it was funny, because the way they did it was, like, that's the kind of the example I used. You went into a castle, and mm-hmm. when your character died,
mm-hmm.
That character was actually dead, but all your stuff got, like, sent out, and then you picked an heir. It was, like, your descendant.
That's fine.
And then your descendant, like, inherited all your shit. And then that dude, when it was, like, the son of whoever...
Could you imagine, like...
Went into the castle until he died, and then it was his son that, like, or daughter or whatever that picked up the mantle and then went in.
Could you imagine, like, in that game, the characters themselves...
Well, they had, like, little portraits. Of the characters who died. So, like, if you were, like, 30 down the rabbit hole and you died, it showed all the other portraits of all the other people who had died. So your ancestors at that point.
Up. And you're playing this game for, like, 20 minutes and, like, you have, like, 16 characters already.
Oh, yeah. It was, like, yeah, roguelites are super interesting.
Could you imagine, though, I'm saying, like, when you're, like, the heir and you pick up the shit that you have to inherit, you're like, when you get this sword, Joe Blow down the street's got a better... Fuck, Dad!
Oh, yeah, like his father didn't make it very far.
Yeah.
And then he's, like, excited to go to the castle. He's like, I'm gonna do better than all my ancestors. Like, I'm gonna finish it.
He's got, like, a wooden
finally.
Sword.
And it's like, yeah, his dad did nothing. He was like, oh, man, come on! The PS1...
There's more games.
The PS1 game that I bring up, like, frequently...
What?
As, like, a niche one, Azure Dreams, that's a roguelite, because you go into the same tower, but the floors are procedurally generated, and then you get as far as you can, and then you leave. And
that's
then
definitely then you go back more of a personal opinion. I fucking hate games like that.
Roguelites are frustrating. Like, I like the idea of them, but in practice, like 99% of the time, I do not like roguelites. No, I liked Rogue Legacy, and I gave that a positive review when I wrote about it, and it's one that I played on my Vita.
Can you finish it, though?
Yeah, you can beat them. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Eventually, yeah. You get to a point where it's like your guy's strong enough where you can, like, go through every room, mm-hmm. even though it's different from all the times before, and, like, there are, like, usually, like, bosses and stuff, and there isn't, like, end games. So it's, like, you eventually do finish it, and then, usually there is some sort of, like, end game kind of content where there's, like, hidden things in the castle that you could get to make, you know, like, your castle or your actual castle or town better. Because I think Rogue Legacy, that was a big thing, too, is, like, you can get things to, like, upgrade your manor, your family manor. And then in Azure Dreams,
photos later,
you live in a city around this tower.
Yeah.
And so you can find items in the tower to, like, upgrade the town that you're from. And that one, you don't die repeatedly. It's just, like,
you go close to death and you have to leave.
Yeah, the leave, yeah.
Or you run out of potions.
And you're trying to, like, push forward. And the idea is there's, like, 100 floors in that one. You have to get to the top of the tower. And there is a story and everything to it. Like,
so how is there a story? It's just like there's some games like...
Yeah, Rogue Legacy didn't really have a distinct story. Azure Dreams, though, which is a roguelite, did have a story and, like, RPG elements to it.
Yeah, but it's a roguelite.
So, a lot of, like, kind of Pokemon DNA to that one as well.
That was not Pokemon.
No. Nah, Pokemon.
It's the 007 all over again with Jurassic Park theme song.
You went through a whole bunch that day, too. Like, you did, like, Jaws, Indiana Jones. Yeah, you were trying to do James Bond, I think.
I don't know why the brain didn't work.
You did Jaws, Indiana Jones.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, and then I was like, none of that's James Bond. It was great.
I still think my favorite is doing the James Bond theme song, and all he goes grabs his Nerf gum.
That is the best. That's great.
We're teaching him young, folks. We're teaching him young.
Because he's angry.
No, I feel like that's a good kind of segue to stop.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of crazy different subgenres and stuff. I think the primary ones we focus on this podcast
are the most popular ones.
Yeah, Metroidvanias, looter shooters, and Soulsborne.
Souls, fuck.
Yeah, Bloodborne and Dark Souls put
together. Soul something with blood and goo. That's what's there. So those three plus the rogue.
I brought up, like, roguelikes as if that was more as a joke, but...
You fuck you, roguelikes.
Roguelikes are weird.
You're weird.
Those are bizarre ones. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to dissect, though, and, like, talk about, because there's so many different, like, main genres, and on top of that, we're getting all these, like, interesting subgenres, two of which within the last 11 years. So.
I know, and then, like, yeah, like you said, two of
those games
last...
get bigger and bigger and more complicated and start to bleed over into other genres, you know, creativity-wise. Mm-hmm. Like, you're just going to get kind of these weird niche
genres,
you know, and some of them are gonna be super popular, like Dark Souls and Bloodborne and Sekiro.
And you like the roguelite ones, which no one fucking likes.
Yeah, usually more indie games, smaller games. That's an old genre. That's one that, like, really doesn't exist very much anymore. If you see it, it's gonna be in a small indie game.
Yeah,
you're not gonna ever gonna see, like, a AAA Ubisoft roguelike title.
To God, if somebody tries to make it a AAA Ubisoft rogue...
Or tower defense. That's another genre.
I'm going to punch whoever created that game.
I can't imagine playing, like...
Bloodborne, but it was regenerated.
But a roguelike?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that would be so weird. I think there probably is, like, things that you can do with that genre that would, like...
I'm not saying there's not.
Uplift it, you know, and make it, like, a big one, but...
Yeah, I'm not saying there's not, but I'm just saying no one fuck that game.
It's an old one. But anyways, I think that's a good kind of capper to our genre conversation.
Genre.
If you're listening to this, I'm going to change the title. It's going to be Metroidvania, Looter Shooters, and Soulsborne. Right now I have it as Metroidvania and Soulsborne, but...
Well, someone had it in Looter Shooters, but whatever, it's cool. It's like he knows his
stuff.
I just thought
about it.
All right, well, this has been an episode of Rage Quit.
Oh, not yet. I got housekeeping.
Oh, whatever, fine.
Whatever. Whatever.
Be proper, keep a theme, that's cool. What's your freaking housekeeping?
So whatever platform you're listening to this on, if there is an easier platform for you to listen on, maybe something you use, like, more regularly.
Oh, expanded, that's right.
Rage Quit is probably there now. So we are on Google Play Music, which we weren't prior.
Nope.
We're also listed with the Google Podcast Directory.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully you'll be able to find Rage Quit more easily. And you can listen to all past episodes, too.
Oh, yeah. On YouTube, especially. You know, it's a big popular one.
Yeah. And so it's not as if you switch platforms and maybe you missed a couple episodes or mm-hmm. you want to catch up and you're new, you can do so on any of these. But, yeah, we're on Google Play. We're also on Spotify now. Mm-hmm. Which...
legit.
I'm most excited about that one, probably. Yeah, it looks really slick. It has everything all kind of neatly bundled together, all the episodes we've done. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's free to use. Yeah. So many people use Spotify nowadays for everything. For, you know, music and apparently podcasting. Which I did not know that you could get your podcast on there until I started doing some research.
Now we do. And now we're...
And then, if you listen to us on CastBox, we'll still be hosting there. Oh, yeah. So if that's an app that you enjoy and maybe you downloaded to... listen to this podcast, mm-hmm. that'll still be our hosting site. So you can still use that app or go to the CastBox page. And then, yeah, I will be dwindling down content for AS Inquisitor mm-hmm. on our YouTube channel, but the podcast will always be there.
Yes, it will.
So that's not anything that's going away. Every week the podcast will be uploaded so you can listen to it mm-hmm. that way and have it on the background, you know, on your TV or your laptop or even your phone.
Whatever works.
And then we're on iTunes as well. And we've been on iTunes for quite a bit, but we just haven't plugged it.
No, it's always been CastBox. But now we've gotten so expanded with how many episodes we've been doing and places we're not posted. So makes more sense to do it now.
Yeah, and I know for certain, like, this isn't early. Like, the Google Play one, mm-hmm. I see with my own eyes, it's posted and there, and as well with Spotify.
Yep.
And then the others we kind of already were. The other thing, and this will be rolling out within the like next few weeks or so, is we're going to be listing the podcast through a myriad of other kind of smaller podcasting sites. So
getting everywhere the tentacle can touch.
Exactly. Where the bear paws can scoop. I'm getting that honey, yo. But, you know, if you use, like, Stitcher or Podbean or, you know, some of these kind of smaller ones and it just happens to be your favorite kind of, like, podcast hosting site, we'll be there within the next month.
Oh, yeah. We'll
that's the goal.
We'll find a place. We'll be there. We'll be there. You'll see the bear. You'll see the fucking bear.
Oh, you'll see it. But, yeah, that's it. That's all we got for housekeeping. Hopefully you enjoyed the episode. Like, our random conversation about very specific subgenres.
I think it's just a random conversation about a lot of things in our podcast.
Yeah, I do get a little tangential at times, but there's so many different unique subgenres of games that my brain started to work and produce things.
Oh god, that's always bad when that happens.
Usually.
Usually. Alright, well again, my name is Ariel Schultz.
And my name is Anthony Schultz.
And as always, follow the bear.
Peace. Have a good night. Hey there guys, this is Anthony Schultz, one half of the duo for Rage Quit. I just wanted to spend a minute or two, at most, talking about Ariel and I's other endeavors or where you can follow her and I if you're a fan of this podcast. So, I'm most prolific on Twitter as far as social media is concerned. I share more kind of gut reaction or like private experiences and opinions there. I'm at Anthony R. Schultz. Pretty easy to remember, just my name. And if you'd be so inclined, you can give me a follow, and I also drop Rage Quit links there every week, and other things that Ariel and I are both working on. AS Inquisitor also streams, which is the production company that produces Rage Quit, essentially myself at the moment, and I stream 5 days a week. I'm a variety streamer, so I do a little bit of everything. Hopefully, there's something there that you would really enjoy, even if it's just one day a week. I take every Thursday and Friday off, and you can follow and or subscribe at twitch.tv/ASInquisitor. All these links that I'm mentioning will be in the description box below, and I will reiterate. Also, AS Inquisitor has a YouTube channel. So if you're not listening to this podcast via YouTube, if you're using your preferred podcast provider, this podcast does make its way to YouTube. We will eventually be recording not only our voices, but also ourselves when we do the podcast. We're just working on some equipment issues right now.
But we also have past streams that I've done for AS Inquisitor that have a little bit more kind of polish or pizzazz to them. They're divided up into like better bite-sized chunks for complete game playthroughs or Let's Plays. There's also a lot of unique content there. I record things throughout the week as I play games, just kind of funny moments or maybe even like personal achievements, things of that nature. And so you can search for AS Inquisitor on YouTube. And again, the link will be in the description below. But those are my three kind of primary platforms that you can find me on. So that's Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch. Ariel actually has her own YouTube channel called Painting with LM Schultz. She's a very talented painter. She has her fine arts degree and enjoys painting for cathartic reasons, as well as to improve on her like technical prowess. So she started her own YouTube channel to improve on her techniques, as well as show people kind of some basics or things that you can do painting wise. There's also some other kind of crafty do-it-yourself kind of ideas and videos on there as well that pertain a little bit more personally to her and I, because they usually involve our family. You know, it's a family project that she's working on. For example, she did our son's Halloween costume. And so she walked through how she constructed and created, you know, the costume and how you could do something similar for your kiddos at home. And then finally, you can follow Ariel on Twitter as well. She is primarily on Twitter, just like myself. We don't really indulge in too many other social media platforms, save for maybe Instagram. I don't think we're as active on there. Ariel might be, more so than myself. But you can follow her at @merhobbit and give her a follow as well. And that's my lovely co-host and beautiful wife, Ariel. But anyways, I just wanted to stop in and kind of throw some links your way. And if you were curious about what AS Inquisitor was doing and how Rage Quit kind of fit into that ecosystem, there it is. Yeah, got all the links for you. If you're interested in any one of those, all of those links are going to be in the description box below, and they're going to be in every podcast episode now. So I'm not sure if they're entirely there right now, but I'm going to be doing a fresh write-up and make sure and have all of those included for you. So just click a link or copy and paste and head on over if any of those strike your fancy. But anyways, thanks for enjoying the show. Really appreciate it. We'll be back next week for more rage quittiness. And as always, follow the bear. And have a good evening, guys.